Across the Sky is proudly sponsored by Weather Call Services. Don't be caught off guard in severe weather. Choose Weather Call.
And we have a special edition of the Across the Sky podcast. I'm meteorologist Joe Martucci. Join with me, my weather brother in Richmond, Virginia, Sean Sublett, Kirsten Lang, and Matt Hollander are away for this episode. They are on some much needed vacation here. Sean, I think, is this our first special edition episode where we're not releasing this on Mondays?
But I think this one is special, a very special time, very special guest. That you were a very important part of this one, Joe. So go ahead and tell the folks who we've got this time.
Well, we have Ken Pomeroy, and you may know him as Ken Pom, the statistician guru for men's college basketball. You know, with the NCAA tournament coming up, I think I learned, or it's going on now. We have the Sweet 16 going on as this episode drops on Thursday. You know, a couple of years ago, I found out that Ken Pom is a meteorologist, and I was like, this is crazy. But at the same time, it reminds me of something a speaker at an American Meteorological Society conference said, which is, if you give a meteorologist a stapler and a roll of tape, they think they can do anything. And that pretty much just describes Ken Pom. He was a meteorologist at the National Weather Service and said, I want to make these ratings for college basketball. We'll learn in the podcast that he actually started out with other sports and then got into men's college basketball, where it is hard not to fill out a bracket or to watch the games without hearing his name. So this was really cool to get him on. He's super busy this time of the year, and we're glad he was able to sit down with us for a half hour to talk about not only his rankings, but his love for weather and his career in weather and getting to where he is now.
Yeah, I mean, people wonder about how they make such a jump from meteorology to college basketball. And we'll talk about that, but you got to remember, a lot of us are huge college sports fans. Most of us went to college, so we've got some of these key allegiances. You know, you and I go back and forth between the Rutgers and the Penn State thing, but you know, yes. NC State, which is very hot right now,
yep,
is a big weather school. We've got a lot of friends who are very happy about that. You know, Wisconsin, Washington, of course, Oklahoma. So lots of interest in the college games out there. So it's really not that big of a jump. And Ken will talk more about that.
Certainly. So without further ado, let's jump into it. Our interview with Ken Pom on the Across the Sky podcast. And we welcome on to the Across the Sky podcast a very, very special and very timely guest as well. In fact, this is so special. We're dropping this on Thursdays. We usually have our episodes on Mondays, but we're doing this on Thursday in anticipation for the Sweet 16. The man who revolutionized men's college basketball forever with his predictive Pomeroy college basketball ratings in the early 2000s. So you might be asking, why do we have a sports guru on? Well, he's also a degree in meteorologist, earned his undergraduate degree at Virginia Tech, and has completed his master's at the University of Wyoming. And we welcome on no other person than Ken Pom, Ken Pomeroy, to the Across the Sky podcast. Ken, thanks so much for being on. We appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem, Joe. It's great to chat with you.
Wonderful. We really appreciate you coming to us in such short notice. I have to ask, do you think you're the most popular meteorologist in American athletics as we speak?
As we speak, that's probably true. I mean, it's a pretty low bar. I don't know who's the runner-up for that honor, but yeah, I'll take it.
There's been a couple of meteorologists in the sports world. I think of Owen Daniels. He was the tight end for a couple of years in the NFL, but I think you got the top spot. I'm going to go with that. Well, we got to ask, you know, we have the Sweet 16 coming up this weekend. What have you made of the first two rounds of the men's NCAA tournament so far?
Well, the story, I think, has really been that the best teams have won for the most part. There were, you know, a few upsets early. Obviously, Oakland beating Kentucky was maybe the headliner, but for the most part, you know, the best teams have won. All the one seeds have made it through, all the two seeds have made it through, and that's pretty unusual for the tournament. So that's really the story so far.
And that's one of the things where, in the back of my mind, there's always this Ivy League wants to come in and do something in the first round. They play a different kind of game than most of the rest of the country. And I was so tempted to take them in my first round, but I did not have the courage to do it. What do you make of that? Is that kind of the right general analysis? Is that the Ivies are playing a different brand of ball than like everybody else, and that's why they make so much noise in the first round?
Well, first of all, probably maybe one of the reasons he didn't take them was because Auburn was ranked fourth in my rating system. So that, I mean,
yes,
deterred a lot of people. They were easily the highest rated team that lost in the first round. Yeah, as far as the Ivies go, I mean, they have had like pretty amazing consistent success here in the last decade or so in the tournament, and the conference just gets better and better and better. It's pretty wild considering how different their structure is with respect to recruiting, and they don't allow fifth year players, for instance. So they can't take advantage of the age that a lot of other leagues do. Yeah, I mean, some of it is they play a little different, although I'm not sure Yale necessarily falls into that. I think we think of more like Princeton, you know, mm-hmm. like funky offense that people aren't able to prepare for, but it really is now. I mean, almost a more conventional brand of basketball that they play. And it's pretty amazing, you know, just year after year. Obviously Princeton last year going to the Sweet 16, and Yale this year winning their game against Auburn. Like, just amazing consistency for a league that kind of hides in the shadows most of the year.
And the crazy thing with that too is Yale needed like a last second basket to beat Brown in the Ivy League tournament. Brown, I think, was 14th and 17, right, Cam? Something like right. that. Probably not high yeah. in your ratings.
Yeah, those are the stories of March, you know. Yale, it was more than just a last second bucket. They were down by like six with the, you know, under a minute to go, and came back and won that game. And like, you know, NC State's in the Sweet 16, and they needed a miracle three-pointer against Virginia in the ACC tournament. They banked it in at the buzzer to force overtime. Otherwise they would have been eliminated and they wouldn't even be here. So it's the stories like that that kind of make this time of year pretty fun.
Sure. So, you know, for the listening public here who might not be paying attention to the college basketball tournament or doesn't know that much, what are your ratings and why have they become so popular? How could you describe what the KenPom ratings are?
Right. They're, you know, so they're a way to rate all the teams in college basketball. So in men's college basketball at the Division I level, there are 362 teams currently. So a lot of teams, you know, impossible to follow them all. So it's nice to have a rating system to organize things. But the thing that was different about my ratings when they started is that they rate the offensive and defensive ability of those teams in terms of the points per possession they score or allow. And it's all adjusted for, you know, teams play wildly different schedules. So it's all adjusted for the schedules the teams play. And so you can learn more about a team than just how good they are. You can learn if they have a good offense or good defense. And then I further, you know, split things up into more detail. So from a weather standpoint, the way I relate it to weather is it's kind of like, you know, the forecast funnel, right? Where you're looking at the big picture first, and then you kind of zoom down into details. And that's basically how you use my site. Big picture, and then you can zoom into as many details as you want to kind of figure out what a team does well or doesn't do well.
And, you know, we should say, too, it's kenpom.com if you want to check out his website, KenPom, KENPOM.com. Go ahead, Sean.
No, that's fine. I was thinking about the rating system and then going back to meteorology, as you alluded to, how this is kind of a version of what we call MOS, or the model output statistics. You know, you've got all this data, and then you put it into some kind of conceptual or mathematical model on the back end, and you get a set of statistics that you can base a weather forecast off of. And I would assume, and correct me if I'm wrong, that this is a similar kind of thing going on with basketball. You've got this humongous set of data, and you run these analyses on there, and then on the back end, you run some statistics or some kind of analysis, and you get some strong suggestions about how teams are going to perform. Is that a reasonable analogy?
Yeah, that's a great analogy. Yeah, no doubt. I mean, you're basically applying, you know, the same kind of principles to all the teams in the country, and, you know, getting some good like base data to start your analytical journey with. And just like Moss, sometimes there's weaknesses, I guess, in the approach. I mean, I think Moss is probably quite a bit different than maybe what I was using when I last was actively forecasting 12 years ago. But, you know, I do remember times where, you know, most of the time, yeah, Moss was great. And every once in a while, you'd see something that was kind of made you question it. And that's kind of how I would say to use my ratings as well. Like, you don't want to take it completely as the gospel. It's a great starting point, but occasionally there might be things that look off, and in that case, you want to do a little more digging.
All right, so let's ask the question we ask all meteorologists on this show. What got you interested in weather? It's a small field. We all know it. What got you interested in weather? And, you know, growing up, you know, what were you really looking out for in the weather world?
Right. I was, you know, a little different in that growing up, I was only interested in the weather from the standpoint of how it possibly would give me days off from school, you know, the big snowstorm coming. I really cared about the forecast then, and I was glued to the Weather Channel. And, you know, occasionally for like tropical weather too, I would get into that, I guess, growing up. But I wasn't necessarily like, you know, I didn't have any dreams of like chase tornadoes or anything like that. So then I, you know, did my undergrad in engineering and was really planning to spend a life doing that. But met somebody in college who was really into weather. And so I didn't even like consider it as a career until that point. And then, you know, kind of realized you could make a career of it. And so once I got done with my undergrad, kind of thought about it, had a regular job for a while, and then, you know, went to grad school and pursued it. And that's what got me started. And I just think the allure was like, you know, there's just a completely different challenge every day. You know, every day is unique. And once I, you know, got into the National Weather Service, it was like, you know, it just seemed like the perfect job for me. Like every day was unique. I love trying to predict things. And even on days where I wasn't predicting stuff, like there were just other challenges at my job that I could take on that that were different. So I really have trouble focusing on, you know, one task. Like I get bored pretty easily. And so it was really kind of the perfect job for that.
So you said you started in Great Falls, Montana in the Weather Service, right? And then you went to Cheyenne, Wyoming, and then the Western Regional Headquarters in Salt Lake City, Utah. Now, you know, you said in 99, you started creating these college basketball rankings and then, you know, started taking off in the early 2000s. So, you know, what got you interested in that? And then I have to imagine at some point, right, it was like KenPom's taking up a lot of my time. The Weather Service is taking up a lot of my time. And what was that decision like for you to say, hey, I'm going to leave weather, you know, in my full-time role and pursue college basketball rankings?
Right. So I guess getting started, I like math in general. I like tables of numbers. If you've seen my website, it's just tables of numbers, right? And so,
yes.
So growing up, Jeff Sagarin was kind of the king of sports ratings. And I would love, you know, digging into his ratings. I'd always have my mom buy the USA Today on I think it was on Tuesdays when he would publish his college basketball ratings. And I kind of always had an idea that I wanted to do something like that. And so all of this also like coincides like kind of the beginning of the internet. So my interest in weather, you know, was fine. But then once the internet kind of started blossoming, you could get weather information from anywhere. Like that fascinated me. And likewise with sports ratings, there are a lot of other people doing sports ratings. And there was some really good information online on kind of explaining the theory of sports ratings. And so when I was in grad school at Wyoming, especially, you know, spending a summer in Laramie, like there, you know, it's not necessarily a lot of entertainment options at that point. So a lot of my time, spare time during the summer, was spent in the computer lab, just kind of like reading this stuff and trying to figure out how to do my own ratings. And so that's really where I got started, and things kind of took off gradually. And, you know, a few years later, I focused on college basketball and got some attention. And as you mentioned, things, you know, eventually got to the point where it was, you know, it really ended up being like a full-time job for me, and it was fun, but it's like I had two full-time jobs. I had this meteorology job I really liked, and I had this job doing basketball ratings, which I really liked, and was getting attention. And yeah, I had to make a decision there at some point. It's like I don't need two full-time jobs anymore. And so, you know, that started really happening, I guess, around 2010 or so. Like it was pretty apparent that I'd reached a level where, you know, I could do this full-time. I just had to figure out how to, you know, get some money from people so I can support myself. And, you know, the next year or two that happened. And then, you know, eventually in 2012, I just kind of broke out and did the basketball stuff full time.
Yeah. I imagine it's always a jump or a huge decision to make that jump into, you know, small business owner, that type of thing. Let me ask you this. It's pretty much college basketball, but were there other sports that you kind of dabbled in first before just deciding on solely college basketball, or primarily college basketball? And if so, why the focus toward college hoops?
In the beginning, I was doing all sorts of obscure sports. I mentioned Sagarin, and really the thought in my head was like, he's really good at college basketball ratings, so I'm not going to like add anything new, like whatever work I do is just going to give me the same conclusions that he's already giving me. So I did do basketball, but it was only kind of to calibrate myself as to like what a good rating system would look like. But yeah, initially I was just like, my idea was I was going to have this rating system that could apply to all sorts of weird sports. And so I was doing like, the first thing I did was high school football in Wyoming, which was an interesting project because there's like 60 teams and there's just a tremendous variation in skill level. You know, some of these schools barely have enough people to field a team, and there are, you know, other schools that have, you know, hundreds, if not, you know, thousands of people, or maybe not thousands, but certainly hundreds of people at their school and would have a very good team. So that's what I, that was one of the things I was doing. I was doing like college lacrosse and college hockey and like minor league hockey. And I had all these weird sports I got into, but eventually I stuck to college basketball, partly because I came up with this, well, I didn't come up with it, but I did the research on the system to do offense and defensive efficiency. So that really got me into it. I loved college basketball growing up. I mean, that was my sport. I grew up in Northern Virginia, where we had a professional, you know, we had an NBA team that was really, really bad. And then we also had like great college basketball. So I really got into that growing up, and that was my favorite sport. And so it just seemed like at some point a natural direction to go and to just focus on basketball and, you know, hopefully do something interesting.
Good stuff. Well, we are here with Ken Pomeroy on the Across the Sky podcast. We'll take a brief break and we'll come back in just a minute.
Hey everyone, Across the Sky is proudly sponsored by Weather Call Services. Don't be caught off guard by severe weather. Choose Weather Call. Get precise, location-specific alerts via phone, text, or email. With over a decade of experience, Weather Call delivers pinpoint accuracy for your exact address, ensuring no surprises. Take charge and stay prepared when ominous skies loom. Explore the Weather Call difference today. Visit weathercallservices.com/Lee Enterprises and safeguard yourself, your business, or any school that matters to you. You can also find that link in our Across the Sky show notes, weathercallservices.com/Lee Enterprises.
We are back with the Across the Sky podcast special edition episode as March Madness continues here, getting into the Sweet 16, and we're here with Ken Pomeroy to talk all about his ratings and his love for meteorology, too. Ken, I just want to talk about the data you left off on the first half talking about some of this. Like, where do you get your data from, and how many hours a week do you spend on the ratings?
So it's been an evolving process. You know, one of the things that held me up, honestly, from starting, so, you know, I mentioned I started kind of the college basketball focus in 2004, but I probably could have started a year or two earlier, but I always was like, there's no way I can handle all this data. Like, I definitely can't like type in all the scores every night. And I don't even know any other way to do this. And so eventually, you know, actually partly through my job as a meteorologist, you know, learned a lot about programming, and eventually the light bulb clicked. I was like, okay, well, I can actually automate a lot of this stuff. And I automated some of it in the beginning, but a lot of it wasn't automated and it did take a lot of work. And over time I've gradually automated things more and more. And I subscribe to a data service. I mean, we're, you know, when you're dealing with college basketball, there's the data industry that, you know, kind of a big deal. So there's people that will kind of do the automation for you almost and just send you box scores and specific formats after games. So I have code on the other end that handles that and updates the ratings when, whenever I get a new box score. So, so that was kind of big over the years. And, I don't need to spend quite as much time on the ratings as I used to. I mean, when I first went to the subscription service, I remember, you know, like every night I was staying up till 2 or 3 a.m. trying to, you know, wait for all the games to come in and update things. And now I don't have to do that. It's all that stuff's automated. On my end, I just need to handle kind of like errors and mistakes, and then, deal with that, you know, which, okay, you know, update. Sometimes box scores are corrected. There's a lot of kind of boring stuff there, but it does give me more time to maybe do writing or watch games or just have a little better work-life balance. That was definitely a struggle in the beginning.
Okay, so once the season ends, what do you do in the off season? I mean, I'm sure there's lots of other things to go back and correct and fix and nudge, but is that where you would spend more time kind of perfecting some things that you're not able to do otherwise during the season?
Exactly. Yeah, the season is it's a sprint, you know. It's pretty hectic. There's a lot going on in the game every night, and so So there's not really as much time to work on maybe longer term projects, you know, better methods to predict scores or whatever. So that's part of it. There's another part of it, kind of a big deal, certainly a bigger deal than when I started, is the idea of preseason rating. So before the season begins, you know, try to rate teams. So we have kind of a good starting point. You know, you might think of it as a good set of initial conditions or whatever in your model. And so I work on that a lot as well. And if, for people who don't follow college sports, it used to be, you know, when I was starting, like if a player was on a team, there was a really, really, if they had eligibility left, there's a really good chance they'd be on the team the next year. But now that's definitely not the case. Like there's a lot more player movement, a lot more transferring going on. And so I do have to keep track of that a little bit in the off season. I do kind of maintain a set of preseason ratings for various programs that want to use that to, you know, improve their scheduling before the season, or, you know, improve their recruiting, or think about those kind of problems. So so there is a little bit of work, but as you mentioned, it's more dealing with kind of longer term things that I have time to think about, updating the website, adding new features to the website. I don't like to do that in the middle of the season because you just don't know if something's going to break. So it's a lot of work like that, but it's definitely like, you know, a slower kind of feeling. You know, time moves a little more slowly in the off season. You just feel a little bit more relaxed.
So following up on that kind of, so, you know, this tournament, right, we saw Yale beat Auburn and Oakland beat Kentucky. Like, what are you thinking as you're watching this in real time in relations to your rankings? Is like, oh, like, you know, I knew it and I should tweak my formula, you know, as I go forward. What's that like for you?
So those thoughts do happen. Yeah, even, you know, not even at the tournament, like even in the middle of the season, you know, some teams might appear to be out of place and you see a result and you think, oh, man, if only I could just come up with a way to, like, predict that. And you know, some stuff you won't be able to predict. Like, yeah, have you ever, like, I think modelers understand this, but if, you know, so Oakland was a big underdog to Kentucky. If you ever designed a rating system going into a tournament with the data that we had this year that would have had Oakland over Kentucky, your rating system actually would have been pretty bad. Like, Kentucky was clearly the better team. They had a bad night. Oakland had a good night, and Oakland won the game. And so, you know, that's something I learned early on. I obviously learned from the meteorology business, which I think gave me an advantage over other people in the sports field, is that, you know, everything is probabilistic and you're really trying to not predict this team is going to beat this other team. You're trying to assign a probability to that happening. And so so that's the way I approach it. So obviously I don't know what I had Oakland as a probability winning that game, but you know, if it was 10%, I mean, maybe looking at the outcome, maybe it should have been 15% or something like that. But you definitely don't want to overreact to like one or two things happening.
I like that you brought that up, because that is also something we've started to see, you know, in football and all other sports at this point for the past several years. It's like, oh, we're at this point in the game, so there's an 85% probability this team is still going to win, but there's still a 50% probability team B can come back. And I think there is a lot to be said for taking that and applying it forward in meteorology, or certainly some parallels there. We know a lot and we have very high confidence toward an event, but you still can absolutely rule out these what we call black swans, I guess, on occasion, right?
Right, for sure. Yeah, that's something that I've tried to impress on people. I mean, obviously, it's tough, I think, for regular people. I don't know if that's the right word, but non-scientists to interpret those probabilities. Sometimes I do have a page on my site called a model diagnostics page, which obviously I also ripped off from in my meteorology days, but it just kind of lists, like, you know, all the games, like what, you know, what probability they had. So all the games that had a 60 to 70% probability, you know, how often did the favored team win and what was expected? And so it just kind of is a handy reference that, hey, you know what, if I say a team has a 65% chance of winning, like they're going to lose, you know, one in three games. Like here's the history that proves that. So the point is not that that team's definitely going to win. It's that, yeah, they're probably going to win, but they will lose on occasion. Like this is definitely a game that is, there's some uncertainty about, and you shouldn't think the result is a given before the game.
I have to ask, because I'm from New Jersey, what did you make of St. Peter's making it to the Elite Eight 2 years ago in regards to your rankings?
Yeah, I think that was probably the most improbable thing that's happened in the NCAA tournament. Like, yeah, obviously my rankings did not anticipate that. And one thing I also do before the tournament is, you know, provide a table of probabilities for each team making each round. So I don't know what it was for St. Peter's, but it was obviously laughably low, so low that you like kind of think, well, maybe this approach is not exactly right. Like, I probably should give a little more credit to the underdog in these situations. I kind of assume every event is like independent. And obviously once you win that first game, I've probably like underrated you pretty badly already. So the chance of you winning that second game should probably be higher, you know, if given you win the first game, the chance you win the second game or the third game should be higher. And so those are the kind of things that an event like that kind of makes you think about.
Yeah. I have to say, on a very positive note, I took your ratings and I picked UConn to win the tournament last year based on what you had going on. So I won some money thanks to you. So thank you, Ken, for that. I appreciate it. From what I read, it was like top 20 offense and top 30 defense wins the national championship. That's what I've read online. Is that, do you concur with that?
Roughly. I push back a little bit at the, you know, the cutoff method.
Okay.
You know, obviously, there might be some cutoffs. You can look at history and there might be some cutoffs that are appropriate, but obviously going forward, you still have unexpected things happen. And so, you know, if you're cutting things off at the top 30 defense, like if somebody has the 31st ranked defense, are you disqualifying them from winning the title? Like, that probably doesn't make physical sense, right? So I think they're good guidelines, but you obviously need to use them intelligently.
Got it.
All right. So let me ask you a little bit about this without getting too into the weeds. Like the North Carolina State situation right now, they barely get in, and now they're hot, right? I mean, that's the hot team. I think it's the only double-digit seed left in the tournament. When you look at an NC State situation, right, are you able to give that any kind of weight? Or, as you said before, is each game kind of independent? You know, there's that whole psychological idea of being in the zone. Right. Is that something you kind of take into consideration as we enter this part of the tournament?
So, you know, things, each game is not independent. I mean, if you won your first two games, chances are you're, you know, a little bit better than we thought you were before the tournament. NC State's an interesting situation because they beat, not to get too far into the weeds, as you said, but they, you know, they beat Texas Tech in their first game, and you know, that's not like necessarily a massive upset. And then the second game, they played Oakland, the team that beat Kentucky. So
right.
NC State favored in that game. So it was a little bit, you know, they're, the fact that they're still here is a little bit due to some bracket luck. But you're absolutely right. Like, things aren't independent. I do think, though, people tend to overrate like the hot hand or teams being hot. You know, teams routinely, you see, especially in the regular season, a team will come up with a big upset victory and all of a sudden they'll get a lot of attention and then they'll, you know, go ahead and like lose two of their next three games or whatever. And the bottom line is like teams kind of have this median or mean performance that they're capable of. And, you know, if you play 30 games a season, like 10 of those games you'll play over your head and you'll play really well. And 10 of those games you'll play worse than normal. And the other 10 you'll kind of play around normal. And for the most part, I mean, there's obviously other factors, but for the most part, when the good games happen and when the bad games happen are pretty randomly distributed.
And going back to weather here, you know, since you left the weather service, are you still involved in weather in some form or way?
Not in a formal sense. Let's put it that way.
What I meant formally. I'm sure you still look at the, you know, track the weather, you know, as a hobby or something, but professionally, were you involved in weather since leaving the weather service?
The closest, so I still stay in touch with people and occasionally I get like speaking engagements, kind of weather, you know, related, tangentially related or whatever. The closest I've come to like still doing weather, for a while, I was maintaining this Twitter account that was only appropriate for me, really, and like a few of my friends. But it basically looked at things like moss, like we were talking about earlier, and like weather observations, and it tried to forecast the local like chance of precipitation and chance of thunderstorms for the next like 3 or 4 hours, because it's like a hard product to get, kind of like in an automated sense. And for me as a human, like that's the thing I really cared about most. My life was like, if I want to go golfing or I want to go hiking, like what's the chance of you know, some bad weather? And obviously I could look at the radar, which I do a lot, but sometimes, you know, I just want to know, is the radar, what are the radar trends going to be in the next 3 or 4 hours? So yeah, it's kind of a one nerdy thing that I did work on, but yeah, I don't have any really other like formal relationship with meteorology at this point.
So everybody's picks are kind of in out at this point. Who do you have in your final four in champ?
Yeah, well, I have Houston as my champ. So, yeah, I mean, for people who are following, like UConn looks really good, and I think they're like clearly the best team. But I sort of have an aversion to picking the team that everybody else is picking. So, if you went by my ratings, you'd pick UConn. But yeah, personally, I have Houston, but I also had Auburn. I had Auburn in the Final Four, and actually had them go to the championship game. So that Yale win kind of broke my heart from that standpoint. But I don't get into the bracket game probably as much as other people, just because I always tell people like my ratings are kind of my bracket. Like,
yeah,
but he can see my ratings, yeah, and they're kind of expecting them to be the guideline for who's good and who's not good. So
right.
So that's really kind of what my reputation is staked on.
Right. Gotcha. So that's kind of a question I was going to ask too. Like, are you going off of your own ratings when you're making the bracket? The answer is pretty much yes. You know, and you still have the top four seeds, the top number one seeds, I should say, all four of them still in the tournament at this time. Now, I do want to end with this. I heard, rumor has it that you're a very big curling fan. Is that correct?
That's correct. Big curling fan, big curling player.
Yeah. Are there KenPom curly ratings out there?
There are. Yeah. That's a much less lucrative side of the business. It really
Olympics
got started
every once in a while.
What's that?
I know. I said the Winter Olympics, every four years.
So actually for the last Olympics, I did get a little bit of like interest in my ratings, and they're, curling is such a small sport, but there are like really like kind of successful coaches and players that are interested in my work on the curling side. So that's something else too, that I work on during the summer, is kind of dealing with that. But as I mentioned earlier, my focus and attention level kind of wanes, and I've obviously done basketball for 20 years, but it's like, I had an engineering job for like 2 years. I was in a meteorology job for 10 years. Like, it's hard for me to stick with something permanently. And I think the curling ratings give me another outlet from like, the basketball ratings are not, I'm not bored with them, but there's a certain routine there that's developed, and the curling ratings kind of freshen things up and give me another problem to try to solve.
Got it. Hey, I've never curled before, but it always looks very interesting. Is there a website for the curling too? Can I check that out somewhere?
You can check that out. It's doubletakeout.com.
I'm going on that as we speak. As we wrap out, doubletakeout.com. Well, Ken, anything else you'd like to add? This was really fun. I really appreciate, and we really appreciate you coming on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I mean, I'm not like formally connected to weather anymore, but I always love chatting with the people I, used to work with or people that are in the industry. I'm still really connected. Check out the forecast. I check out the models all the time. So it's great to be able to chat with you guys.
Awesome. Well, Ken, thanks so much. He's the man if you need college basketball rankings, KenPom.com. We're going to take one more break. We'll be back with you on the other side of the Across the Sky podcast. What an episode. I had a smile on my face, I think, the whole time, or at least internally had a smile on my face.
Hey, everybody. Dude was smiling. I'm going to tell you right now.
I loved it. I have my University of Wyoming t-shirt on for my man Ken. He's a Wyoming grad. I'm a Wyoming supporter, we'll say. So I certainly dressed the part. Sean, I should say, in our March Madness bracket, you right now are in third place in our bracket we do here at work. So you're doing pretty good, my friend.
Yeah, I was
a little
surprised.
It sounds like you followed the KenPom.
I was a little surprised at how well I did. I kind of went with this mixture of seeds, historical conferences that do well, historical teams that do well. I did follow the NC State thing a little bit, figuring they would go a little farther just because they were hot coming off of the ACC tournament. I did not pick Yale. I did not have the guts to pick Yale over Auburn. And as he said, as Ken said, it was that would have taken some guts, because Auburn, number four nationally in his rankings, and he had them in the Final Four. And
yeah.
And I had North Carolina as my champ, but a couple of my, I had Auburn in the Final Four. They're gone. So, that's the way it goes. That's why they call it March Madness, right?
That is absolutely correct. My Final Four is UConn, North Carolina, Purdue, and Kentucky. That did not go well for me.
I had Kentucky also. So yeah. It's just, at this point, I'm just in it for the ride. My I don't think I will advance past third place in the thing here at work. But I was surprised when I looked down on Friday evening. I'm like, oh my heavens, I'm in first place. How long is this going to last? And it doesn't last long.
It's it is madness, as they say. And we'll use our brackets, our final fours, as our Across My Sky for this episode, since we all got something a little bit different here. But just turning it back to Ken in the interview, really gracious with his time. There are a number of similarities between meteorology and his rankings. It's very data heavy. Weather is data at its core, and how to use the data to create forecasts, which is what he's doing with his Ken Palm ranking. So it was cool to see those similarities. And, you know, it's interesting. You know, it's always interesting when someone in weather gets out of weather, I feel like, because you do have this passion for it. And, you know, with him, he's gone to Ken Palm and it's been tremendous for him. So it's an incredible episode. If this is our first special episode, we'll have to go way back in the archives. But if it is, very fitting guest for this. Sean, so we have plenty of more Across the Sky podcast episodes coming up on our normal time, which is Mondays. You can find it wherever you get your podcast. Coming up on our schedule, let's go through it here. Hold on, I got to pull it up. Do you have it up, Sean?
No, but I mean, we've got Chris Bogaski coming up to talk about lightning again. Teresa Crimmage is coming up to talk about spring and how it's kind of ahead of schedule. We've also got folks from Colorado State when we start talking about the hurricane outlooks, because their first hurricane outlook comes out first week in April. So all this stuff is coming down the pike. So hang on. It's going to be a good time. And by the way, just as Joe said, rate us. Tell a friend. Give us a little star thing on the podcast. It helps. That stuff helps. Subscribe. All that stuff. It helps. So thank you very much for supporting the podcast.
Absolutely. And I want to clarify two points. One, this is our first special episode. I just checked back in our archives. And two, Teresa Crimmins is coming on next Monday, April 1st, to talk about the status of spring. So that will be our next episode here. Podcast@lee.net is where you can email us if you have questions. In fact, the episode with Chris Bogaski is going to be based on an email listener's question. Joshua Williams in Oklahoma, who sent us a question about lightning and made us have that episode. So your emails do matter to us. We do read them and we do appreciate it. For Sean Sublett and Kirsten Lang and Matt Holliner, I'm Joe Moratucci as part of the Across the Sky podcast team. Thanks again for listening to the podcast.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit amfam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.